Good day, and welcome to the National Immigration Forum and Forward U.S. Dreamers Press Call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I'd like to turn the conference over to Kathleen Farrell. Please go ahead.
Good morning, and welcome to the National Immigration and Forward U.S. Press Call. I'm Kathleen Farrell, Communications Director for the National Immigration Forum. Last week, the Trump administration announced its decision to rescind Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, or DACA. No new applications for DACA are being accepted, and as of March 6, 2018, individuals' deferred action status will end as expiration dates begin for some 800,000 young immigrants who were brought here as children, have been in the country for at least 10 years, passed background checks, and are working or going to school. The decision to rescind DACA means that it's now up to Congress to pass a permanent legislative solution, such as the DREAM Act, that addresses Dreamers in a constructive, compassionate way that serves the interests of American workers and their families. This morning, we're fortunate to have with us on this call speakers from the faith, law enforcement, and business communities, as well as a beneficiary of DACA. And with that, let me turn to our first speaker, Reverend John Wester, Archbishop of the Diocese of Santa Fe, New Mexico. Archbishop, please go ahead.
Thank you very much, Kathleen. Thank you all. I am pleased for this opportunity to speak today because of the fact that I and many of my Catholic brother bishops are deeply troubled by the decision to end DACA. DACA has stood, as we all know, as a counterpoint for some time now to the voices of exclusion, and now without the action of Congress, this crucial support for these young immigrants has been taken away. These are young people who are talented, hardworking, and full of potential and promise. They were brought here by their parents, and they want to contribute their skills and their talents and their allegiance to the only country they've ever known. It seems to us that deporting them to countries they do not know would be nothing less than cruel. These are committed young people, and they have deep values. They represent a core of pursuing the American dream with enthusiasm. We believe that the decision to rescind DACA is a betrayal of those values, and it dims the hopes of these young people, and frankly, it dims us. It lessens us as a people. And so I call upon our legislators in Congress to expeditiously pass the Bipartisan DREAM Act without compromise and for President Trump to sign it into law. These are young people who deserve a chance to become U.S. citizens, to gain status in our country, and to contribute to our future. It seems to me that this is truly a moral decision. I'm reminded of the words of Pope Francis when he, not so long ago, spoke to the joint session of Congress. And he said that we need to avoid a common temptation nowadays to discard whatever proves troublesome. Let us remember the golden rule, do unto others as you would have them do unto you, from Matthew's Gospel. To this end, we believe that deporting exemplary young people who were brought here as children and who know only the United States as their home is not in our interest as a moral and generous people. Our country has the right and responsibility to regulate its borders. We ask that this be done humanely, and we call upon our legislators to please pass the DREAM Act. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Archbishop. And now, Police Chief Mike Tupper from Marshalltown, Iowa. Chief, please go ahead.
Good morning, everybody. Thanks for your time and for allowing me to participate in this important conversation. As a police chief of a small but very diverse community in central Iowa, I see the end of DACA as a very destabilizing force in my community. And quite frankly, the political climate surrounding immigration over the last couple of years has been a very negative force in all of our communities. And I don't think it's been representative of how the majority of at least my community feels, and I think the majority of this country feels. When dreamers and immigrants feel safe and are free to engage with local police, all of our communities are safer. Local law enforcement all across this country works very hard on a daily basis to engage the public, to build relationships with everybody in the community. And we need those open and honest relationships in order to continue to enhance safety and build trust in our community. DACA recipients, as a requirement, pass background checks. They've been in our country for more than 10 years. They're very much contributing members of our society and of my community. Dreamers are not people that we in law enforcement have had to worry about, at least not until we get to the point where we start pushing people back into the shadows, taking away their opportunities to work legally, contribute to their household, and reducing their chances at educational opportunities. I strongly urge Congress to take immediate action to pass legislation that will solve these issues and move our country in a positive on a positive path forward. The Dreamer Act really needs to be passed, and we need to take immediate action to address these problems. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chief Tupper. Now, Jessica Clem, the Vice President of Community and Government Relations from Technology Credit Union in San Jose, will speak. Please go ahead.
Thank you. DACA recipients constitute the next generation of tech workers who are currently being educated in America's school system. Our nation does not produce enough computer science, analytics, and engineering graduates to meet the job demand from tech companies. One quarter of DACA recipients are pursuing post-secondary education. They represent a domestic source of intellectual capital that will work in different tech jobs from startups to global corporations. Immigration has long been a source of strength for America's innovation economy, and DACA recipients contribute to this economic vitality. A recent survey revealed that more than half of America's startups valued at $1 billion or more were founded by immigrants. Immigration policies like DACA help ensure that we are able to continue to retain the best global talent. Dreamers will be an important part of the tech community that will cultivate emerging industries like artificial intelligence, autonomous vehicles, and cybersecurity. Immigration sustains our innovation economy and helps grow American jobs. It is vital to my company, TechCU's, continued growth in its membership and revenue for DACA members to be part of our society. It is also important for our workforce, as we have hired many extremely bright and capable employees who are some of our high potential for future leadership. Because of this, we call on Congress to pass permanent legislation such as the Bipartisan Dream Act. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jessica. And now, Lizzy Adala from Forward U.S., who is a communications associate there and also happens to be a DACA recipient. Please go ahead, Lizzy.
Thank you. My name is Lizzy, and I am 27 years old. I found out that I was undocumented during my junior year of college at Northwestern University in December of 2010 when I got a letter in the mail from the Department of Homeland Security. And it was a notice to appear in immigration court, which is basically the first step in the deportation process. I was completely unprepared for that news because I had heard sound bites about the undocumented immigrant experience, and nothing that I had heard I was able to reconcile with what I was truly experiencing in my life. My family and I had moved from Canada to Texas in October of 1996 when I was just 6 years old. We came on a visa, and in Texas, I had a truly all-American upbringing. I was a Girl Scout. I wrote for my school newspaper, and I spent 5 years learning how to square dance, which is not a transferable skill. But my parents had spent my entire childhood trying to gain permanent residency, but we fell out of status because one time our lawyer filed our paperwork late, and another time the employer sponsoring us sold his business, requiring us to restart the entire application process. So we played by the rules, but things went wrong, and navigating our broken immigration system has been both emotionally exhausting and financially draining. Fortunately, DACA was announced on my college graduation day, and after passing a background check, including fingerprinting, and providing all of my family's information, including their names and home addresses, I earned a 2-year renewable work permit that truly changed the entire trajectory of my life. Since earning DACA in 2012, I've been able to buy a home, buy a car, I've been able to pay off tens of thousands of dollars in student loans, I was able to launch a small business where I help U.S. citizens with their resumes so that they can get jobs. I also have a driver's license, which lets me get on a plane to visit my family in Texas and drive when I get there. I have a job that allows me to pay my fair share of taxes. I live in D.C. now and have an apartment here where I pay rent. I eat at local restaurants. I shop at local stores. I use public transportation. All of those dollars get reinvested back into the community and help improve the lives of U.S. citizens who live here. The DACA program, by any measure, has been an incredible success, allowing us to add billions of dollars to the American economy. But unfortunately, I will become a priority for deportation on May 4th when my DACA expires. May 4th is basically my expiration date in this country. And without a work permit, without protection from deportation, all of that potential will be taken away. I will lose my job. I will lose my ability to pay rent. I will lose my ability to legally drive. I will no longer be able to be an American taxpayer or utilize any of the skills that I've developed in this country since moving here as a first grader more than 2 decades ago. College students across the country will be ripped away from classrooms. They will be deported to countries that they have no memory of. Families will be torn apart. U.S. citizen children will be ripped from the hands of their young undocumented mothers. Employers will lose skilled workers. Our economy will take a hit of $450 billion in GDP loss over the next decade. Congress needs to come together to pass and implement the Bipartisan Dream Act, because every single day that this isn't fixed, we get closer and closer to a day when I will get evicted from my home. And if Congress fails to take action, then in 6 months, 1,400 young people will be ripped out of the American workforce every single business day for the next 2 years. So getting rid of Dreamers is not something that we can afford economically, and it's not something that we can afford morally. But fortunately, I think the country is on my side. I think it's on the side of Dreamers. Last week, hundreds of business leaders from every sector of the economy sent a letter to President Trump urging him to protect Dreamers. And these leaders came from companies like Best Buy, Facebook, AT&T, Microsoft, Hyatt, General Motors. We saw Wells Fargo and IKEA also stand up to protect Dreamers. Because what they all know is that while there are 800,000 recipients of the DACA program, that in many ways, we are all DACA beneficiaries, and this nation is better because Dreamers are in it. So we should continue finding opportunities to protect Dreamers, both because it makes economic sense and because it's simply the right thing to do. So I want to call on my members of Congress, Representative Lamar Smith and Senators Cornyn and Cruz, to stand with me, to stand with the other 125,000 Dreamers who make Texas a better place, to stand with the 800,000 DACA recipients in this country who make this country better, and to vote in favor of the DREAM Act and to keep us here at home. It's been almost 21 years since I moved to this country, and I think that I am deserving of a permanent solution. We are deserving of certainty that we can build our lives here just like every other American, and we are deserving of having a shot at the American dream. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Lizia, for sharing your personal story. It's very compelling. And our last speaker is Pastor Tyler Johnson, who's the lead pastor of Redemption Church in Phoenix, Arizona. Please go ahead, Pastor.
Yes. I just want to start by saying I am a signator to the Evangelical Immigration Table letter that urged the protection of DACA recipients, as well as a signator of the Evangelical Immigration Table Foundational Principles. As a pastor and follower of Jesus, it's essential to know that followers of Jesus are called to do justly and to love mercy, which compels us into this issue. We're called to open our mouths for those who are mute and destitute, and that means standing on the side of justice with DACA kids. DACA has provided 800,000 young people with a means to educate and support themselves, and in many cases to support family members as well. And we believe strongly that it would be wrong to deprive them of these opportunities, morally wrong, as well as the wrong decision for the benefit of the United States of America. These young people know only the United States as home. We've come to know them as our colleagues, our dear friends, our neighbors, and members of our church communities. We must protect these young people and their families, because protecting families and keeping them together is a very cherished value. We must not deport the American promise that these young people represent. That's not who we are. We see this in our churches. I'm the lead pastor of what we call a multi-congregational church. There's 10 congregations throughout the state of Arizona, and we have numbers of stories of families that will be ripped apart if this is not dealt with in a legislative way for the legislators to pass legislation such as the Bipartisan Dream Act, that we literally will have DACA recipients who now have children separated from their children, separated from families, let alone separated from the fundamental communities in which they have now been a part of for years and years and years, and that's where we believe this is morally wrong. And we have specific stories of some of the best in our churches and the best in our communities, students who've been valedictorians, some of the best students on our college campuses, some of the best people that participate in businesses in our communities and serve at the highest levels of our organization that are DACA recipients. So, again, on my behalf and all those who signed the Evangelical Immigration Table and our church, we call on our legislators to pass this legislation, such as the Bipartisan DREAM Act, to protect these young people and keep our community strong and intact.
Thank you very much, Pastor Johnson. Operator, can you please let folks know that we're taking questions now?
Certainly. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question at this time, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're on a speakerphone, please make sure that your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. We ask that you please limit yourself to one question. You are welcome to press star 1 to re-queue again. Once again, that's star 1 if you would like to ask a question at this time. And once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1. And we do have a question from Sarah Bowden from Iowa Public Radio.
Yeah, Chief Tupper, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, great. Can you just expand a little bit more about, sorry, I was taking out that grid notes, but can you expand a little bit more about how public safety and communication and people feeling like they can talk to law enforcement is important to your job, and how DACA and DREAM Act kind of intersect with that?
Well, I think it's just important in general for our entire community to feel like they have a voice when it comes to the policing of our community, and to feel like it's safe for them to call the police, to engage the police. We have a very diverse community in Marshalltown, and 30-40% of my community, if all of a sudden they're no longer feeling comfortable in calling the police to report when they're a crime victim or when they might need help, that could have devastating impacts on our community. But the reverse side is a lot of these folks are our friends and neighbors, and if they're unwilling to call the police in general, and they see a crime occurring in their neighborhood, or maybe your house is being burglarized, but they're afraid to call the police because they don't want immigration consequences for themselves, because they fear that. Now all of a sudden, we have less people in our community that are helping us. Like many small police departments around this country, we have limited resources, and I tell people all the time, at any given moment in my community, we have 5 police officers on duty covering the entire community. We can't be everywhere at once. We need the public's help. We need the public to be our eyes and ears. We need the public to be able to trust in us. And if I have a large portion of my community that fears that they're going to be deported or have immigration consequences, if they engage the police, they're just going to shut down, and my community is going to be less safe, and that's not going to be a benefit for anybody.
And once again, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question at this time, please press star 1 now. And once again, that's star 1 for questions. And if you are on a speakerphone, please make sure you pick up your handset or depress your mute function to allow that signal to reach our equipment. And we do have a follow-up question from Sarah Bowden from Iowa Public Radio.
Chief Tupper. I understand that there is I remember there being a very large immigration raid in your community about 10 years ago. Can you talk about how that has affected law enforcement efforts and how I read some of your writing, and is it right to assume that you have a fear that history might repeat itself?
Well, I wasn't working in Marshalltown when that raid took place 10 years ago. What I will say is, you know, I've been the police chief in Marshalltown for the last 6 years, and it's taken us a long time to recover from that raid and to build trust back in the community. Local law enforcement had absolutely nothing to do with that raid 10 years ago, but, you know, when people see somebody in uniform, we're the face of law enforcement, and we kind of all get thrown into the same group at times, and people get confused between what federal law enforcement authority is and what state and local law enforcement authority is. And we've been working very hard in our community, not just at the law enforcement level, but in city government, at the community level, to be inclusive, to be tolerant, to build up trust in the community, and to make sure that everybody in our community is engaged in government and in the policing of our community, and everybody has a voice. And I am very fearful that we could take a big step backwards, and that, again, is going to diminish public safety in our community. It's not going to help us economically. It's just not going to help us, period. And this problem just really needs to be solved. And I've been in law enforcement for almost 25 years now, and we've been talking about comprehensive immigration reform across this country for the last 25 years. And I think it's time that we solve the problem.
Operator, are there any more questions?
I show no further questions at this time.
I'd like to thank all our speakers and press, and we'll be sending out a recording of this call later today. Thank you all very much.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.